Okay, so then, here then we've concluded the five daily great sacrifices. So in the Vedic culture, this is a very major thing, that of paying debts to who you owe something to. I mean, somebody does you benefit, then there has to be reciprocation. There has to be appreciation. Something has to be there in all spheres of life. Right? So at least the concept in the Vedic culture is at least the very major important points has to be addressed. Then, as you understand it, you'll apply it all down to all the little details, wherever there are in your life. But it always has to start with at least that. It's just like the living entity should be respectful to everyone. But at least you can be respectful to the guru, the teachers, your parents, elders, you're like this certain, respectable family members, or someone who's very powerful or very wealthy or very knowledgeable, at least that much. And others who are just common, okay. But we see the advanced Vaishnava, is he respectful even to the bugs? He's not stepping on them, right? Jarabharat, when he's carrying the palanquin for Rahugana, Maharaj Rahugana, then he's walking very erratic because he's trying to avoid stepping on any of the ants and bugs. Right? The king is, hey, what are you doing? Can't you walk properly? And then it's like, then Jarabharat then tells him, hey, you're sitting there thinking like you know what's going on and you're very respectable, but you don't actually know what's respect, what is all these different things. So these at least are minimum. And then if the other things are not there, they're not good, but at least it won't get you major. Right? You don't respect your guru. You get major reaction. You don't respect the bug, you'll get minor reaction. Reaction you'll get, but minor. Right? So therefore, at least in the major things that your life can still be successful and progressive and all that, that much must be done. Like that. Does that make some sense? So that's the whole principle. So in here, these five great sacrifices, at least in this much, you understand your gratefulness to at least these five categories. Right, the demigods manage everything in the universe. Because of that, you get whatever you need. Right, because the Brahmins are there, therefore the demigods are satisfied that you get whatever you need. Right, because the sages are there, then the scriptures are there that the Brahmins follow and you follow, that the sacrifices are done, that the demigods are pleased you get what you need. Right, that you because you have taken birth, you've taken birth into a family line, and because of your forefathers, your line is there. Otherwise, there wouldn't be any places for you to take birth, right? So therefore, you owe a debt to them. And then so many living entities, all living entities are there that you're getting benefit from. You're eating your rice, you're breathing your air, you're doing all these different things. So many living entities are taking care of these things, and so we owe something to them. So like that, in this way, at least this much we're respecting. Otherwise there's more than this, but at least these are the major. Right? So then it's pointed out, because so that debt is there, that should be understood. So then how to fulfill that debt as Vaishnavas? By worshipping the Supreme Lord. By following Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. Therefore, then, it's all done. Right? And if we're respectful and, respect the Vaishnavas, then so many of these things we also do. We take care of guests. We perform our sacrifice, which means chanting the holy name. Right? We study the scriptures. Like that. So the demigods, because they're only the arms of the Lord, so we worship the Lord himself rather than just his arms. Right? And the forefathers are also part of the universal form. And so are the other living entities. So by worshiping the Lord, then you've already taken care of the demigods, the forefathers, and the other living entities. Right? And then the scriptures have come from that Lord, and the Brahmins are his devotees. So then it takes on a whole different flavor. Same thing, but it's the same different flavor. So it makes sense. So that's the whole point, is that gratefulness must be there. So we can see is up to this point then, cleanliness, respect, celibacy, that is gratefulness, purity, all these different things, non-violence, have all come into play. They've been discussed. Okay, so now this is, takes care of, this is 4, 5, this takes care of much of the duties of a Brahmin. So now in discourse, this is what, oh, four. Discourse four. Then topic nine now is modes of gaining subsistence. Now how is he going to maintain himself? Okay, he's very nice. He has all this good behavior. He does everything nicely. How is he going to take care of himself? What's he actually going to do? Having dwelt with the teacher during the first part of a man's life, the Brahmin shall live during the second quarter of his existence in his house after he has wedded a wife. Okay, so the wedding is already explained before. You know, the Brahmacharya Ashram was done, and then the Grihastha Ashram, and then the sacrifice that has to be performed. Now, he says, after he's wedded a wife. Now, he's going to live in his house after he's wedded a wife. So now that house and that wife need maintenance. A Brahmin must seek a means of subsistence which either causes no or at least little pain to others, and live by that except in times of distress. In times of distress, then he might find another occupation that's not necessarily the most important. We see that it says it causes as little distress to others as possible. You know, the performance of the duty itself. Like that. That's why a Brahmin will take studying and teaching, you know, let's say over the Kshatriya duties, because the Kshatriya duties then in the administration and that, the diplomacy and all that, many people are disturbed. And then farming and that, then so many living entities are killed when you plow the field and all that. So then they won't accept, they'll avoid that also. So then those won't be accepted if he can perform his own duties as a Brahmin. If he can, then he may accept these others. Does that make sense? Because for a Brahmin, he must do as simplest as possible. Kshatriya, he must do those things. Because for him, the politics, the diplomacy, the chastisement, all these war, all this is just normal for him. Or for the Vaishya, then plowing the field, taking care of the cows, doing business, all that's normal for him. So there's no difficulty in it. But for the Brahmin, he'll always pick something simpler. For the purpose of gaining bare subsistence, let him accumulate property by following those irreproachable occupations which are prescribed for his caste without unduly fatiguing his body. Right. So here we have irreproachable means that they are irreproachable for Brahmins. Right? Like in Mahabharata you see so many times that Yudhishthira Maharaj, Arjuna, and Bhima, and especially Bhima and Yudhishthira, are constantly even Bhishma, Drona, are criticizing the Kshatriya Dharma in that they have to go on the battlefield, and if they've been challenged, it's a religious war and all that, he has to fight with all his relatives and friends. That's Kshatriya Dharma, he's been challenged. A Brahmin can just say no, but a Kshatriya can't. Therefore, for a Brahmin, the Kshatriya duties are reproachable. Right? They're considered less. Or he wants to sell goods. He has to. You have to tell some kind of lies. You know, it's not what you call white lies. You know, it's not a big deal. You know, because the person that you're telling it to, he couldn't handle the truth anyway. So it's not a matter that they're so honest either. You know. So, therefore, that's just the way business is. You know, like that. So. For him, that's reproachable, for the Brahmin. But for the other Varnas, it's not. That's the duties. It goes with their nature. So it's not a problem. Like that. Okay. Except as before, in times of distress, then they may take him because they can't perform the other duties. Which are prescribed for his caste. In other words, he should always stick to Brahminical duties, even if they may not give as good results. Without unduly fatiguing his body means he'll only do how much is beneficial. You know? Means there's a certain amount of the day, Prabhupada says 8 hours, that you work for economic development. That's all. You shouldn't go more than that, if it's for yourself. You know, you're just maintaining your family, that's 8 hours. Because then that leaves you then 16 hours, you know, to take your rest and your other things and maintaining the family and sadhana and temple programs and all this kind of thing. Because otherwise, more than eight, then you become tired, and you may make more money, but you know you can't enjoy it. Your sadhana is not going to go on. Your family life is not going to prosper. So actually, you've made more money, but you actually have not prospered. So so it's not worth it. You know, greed does not make prosperity. Right? He may subsist by Rita, truth, Amrita, ambrosia, Amrita, Amrita. Oh, it's just got attacked twice. It's supposed to be, or by mrita, death, and by pramrita, that which causes many deaths, or even by the mode called satyanrita, a mixture of truth and falsehood, but never by shvabriti, a dog's mode of life. Rita shall be understood by the gleaning of grains, amrita, what is given unasked, mrita, food obtained by begging. Agriculture is declared to be pramrita. Trade and money lending are called satyanrita. Even by that one may subsist. Service is called svabriti. Therefore one should avoid it. So these are the ones that he can live by. Rita means that he picks up grains that are left in the field after harvest or in the marketplace after the market closes. In other words, it's what people don't want. So Rita, that's truth. That's not like Raghunath Das. He would go collect the grains after what they from the Ananda Bazaar, where they sell the prasad. After then it goes bad, they throw it out the back. Then, you know, that's where all the cows go. He's like, I think they keep the goshal over there too. So the cows then eat it, and then when it gets so bad, the cows won't eat it. So now he takes that. So that's the, you know, most extreme form of Rita. Then he takes it home, washes off the bad part, and a little hard inner core, he eats that. Like that. Amrita means just what's unasked, just what comes without you asking. You make no arrangements, just whatever you get. You know, like that. Then Mrita is death, means begging. Like that, because death means it's humiliating. Because people, because you're a beggar, they always make comments. Some people are very nice, some people are nasty, some this, that, so you don't really know what you're going to get from your poverty. Pramrita, which causes many deaths, that's farming. Because when you're plowing the field, bugs get squished, and, you know, worms, and this, and that, something like that. But, you know, in that thing, there's no sin. The point is, this is just more. Then, trade and money lending, satyanrita, which is half truth, half lie. Right? You have to tell some truth, otherwise people are going to do business with you, but you can't tell truth, and you're not going to do any business. Right? Let him never, for the sake of subsistence, follow the ways of the world. Let him live the pure, straightforward, honest life of a Brahmin. Just to make money, let him never do what everybody else does. Let him just be a Brahmin and do that. Whether he prospers greatly, because before it said, gaining bare subsistence. This is the principle. So it's honest, straightforward life of Brahmin. So just do that. Even if it's not so prosperous as others, but what does it matter? Someone else is prospering by not straightforward means or not honest means. They will prosper today, tomorrow they will suffer. But if you just live at whatever you have, then tomorrow you will be also happy. If you're satisfied, today you're happy, tomorrow you'll also be happy. The other person today is not satisfied, but he's happy, and then tomorrow he'll be dissatisfied and unhappy. Like that. So therefore, the Brahmin should stick to his duties. He who desires happiness must strive after a perfectly contented disposition and control himself, for happiness has contentment for its root. The root of unhappiness is the contrary. So happiness, its root is contentment. If you're satisfied, you're happy. If you're satisfied, you're automatically happy. But if you're not satisfied, then you can only be happy on attaining material desire. You understand? There's two methods you can become happy, you know, in dealing with the material world. One is be happy with whatever you have, because you already had it. And because you already have it, you can be happy today. You can be happy tomorrow, because you still have it. Right? Or if you lose it, then it doesn't matter. So whatever the situation, you're always happy. But if you put your happiness on attaining, fulfilling material desire, then you'll never be happy. There'll be a moment here and there. It's like the what the acharyas give the example of. It's called habudubu. Right? I think in the West they call it a dunking stool, right? Take a big long stick, you know, and put a chair at one end, tie the guy onto it. And the other end, then you lift it up and you lower them into the water. And then you leave them there until you start to see bubbles coming. And then when you do, then you pull them out of the water. And that breath that they take at that time is like the dearest thing to them, the most valuable thing that there is. And once they get that breath, you know, their lungs are full, then again you dunk them back into the water and leaving them till again bubbles are coming. And just before they're about to drown, you pull them out again and they get one breath of air. So like that you keep them alive. So that's Maya. Is that you're practically dead because you can't fulfill any desire, and then when you're really just about to throw in the towel, then she'll let you fulfill one desire, and then everything's okay, and then boop, again back in the water. So that's Maya. You know. So if you're contented, then whatever you have, you don't have, you're happy. Because if you look at it, happiness is only the fulfillment of desire. So desire is pain. So therefore, freeing yourself from pain, that moment it's pain is gone, or the process of relieving yourself of the pain, that's called happiness. When the pain is gone, it's not happy anymore. Right? Does that make sense? You're outside, it's hot, sweaty, sticky. You walk into somebody's house, it's nice and cool. Right? Like that. And while you're sitting there and you're cooling down, you feel happy. But as soon as you've adjusted, you now your body temperature and the air temperature in the room, which is cooler, is the same, you don't notice it. It's just normal for you. In fact, you might even start to complain that it's, you know, the AC is not so good. You know? Like that. So then you're not happy. Though a few minutes before it was the best thing around, and then after 10 minutes it was, hey, you know, what's going on? So that's material happiness. You're removing pain. You have hunger, you eat, the pain starts to go away. It tastes very good. When the hunger is gone, then the food doesn't taste good anymore. Like that. So that's the... So this is a very important thing. Now, contentment. In other words, maintain yourself by the simplest, straightforwardest way that's suitable for a Brahmin, and be content with whatever the situation. You can do that. You'll be happy. Right? That will give you happiness. Other things won't. Like that. Okay. Topic 10, duties of a snataka. Okay, this one goes back. Yeah. We'll just fix the rest of the chapter. A Brahmin who is a snataka and subsists by one of the above mentioned modes of life must discharge the following duties which secure heavenly bliss, long life, and fame. So just because they secure heavenly bliss, long life, and fame, then that doesn't mean that they're rejected. It just means you don't do them for heavenly bliss, long life, and fame. Right? It means these are the modes of subsistence. There aren't another mode. Right? Does that make sense? It's just it's not another mode for a Brahmin. Kshatriya, then he has his duties. Vaishya has his duties. But even those are contained in here. Right? These are the ways you can maintain yourself. There's not other ways. Yeah. So that's the point is then, therefore, but it's not that they're not done. So it's just that they're not done for this. Like that. Or you can take it that the actual bliss is in the spiritual world. Long life, you can't get better than eternity. And fame, devotees are always famous. You know? Okay. So that's why it should be, oh, this is karma. It means maybe, but if it's done in with detached knowledge and detachment, then it's bhakti. That was Arjuna's point. I'll give up Kshatriya Dharma and pick up brahminical dharma. And Krishna says, no, you perform your own duties according to your nature, but with knowledge and detachment and doing it for Krishna. Snatika means one who's graduated. 10.1. Maintaining purity in the performance of occupational duties. Let him untired perform daily the rites prescribed for him in the Veda. For he who performs those according to his ability attains to the highest state. So if you perform your duties that are prescribed for you, then you'll attain happiness. You perform another's duties, then there'll always be difficulty, always be trouble. So here he says the highest state. The highest state can be, you know, just if you say highest state, then everybody has their idea of the highest state. So everybody will be inspired. Right? So for us, we know highest state is transcendence. So if it's done for Krishna, then it's transcendence. We go to the spiritual world like that. Well, for the jnani, he just goes to the Brahman. The karmi goes to heavenly planets. Whether he be rich or even in distress, let him not seek wealth through pursuits to which men cleave, nor by forbidden occupations, nor let him accept presents from any giver, whosoever he may be. So we see that's a reiteration of this one before. Let him never, for the sake of subsistence, follow the ways of the world. Let him live the straightforward, pure life of a Brahmin. So then those two, that's the point. Let him not, out of desire for enjoyments, attach himself to any sensual pleasures. And let him carefully obviate an excessive attachment to them by reflecting on their worthlessness in his heart. Right? So, doing things that people just themselves, by their sensual attachment, connect themselves to, it's not important. Then, what is forbidden shouldn't be done like that. And don't accept presents from any giver. Right? Those who are qualified givers, those who are accepted from. You know, this will also be clarified later. It means you can accept something that comes on its own without asking from anybody. But if the person is not qualified, you can't use it for yourself. You have to give it to the deities, use it for the spiritual master, use it for dependents. But you can't get any benefit from it. Like that. Like that. So let him not accept, means for himself. He can accept for others. Okay, and then desire to enjoy, don't let him attach himself to sense gratification. Because then that's useless. You attach yourself to sense gratification, one, you lose the sense gratification anyway. That's the way it is, because sense gratification is opulence. Opulence is female. Female, as soon as you attach yourself to, then they move away. As soon as you become detached, they move towards you. That's just the way it functions. Right? So, therefore, out of a desire, you attach yourself to it, you won't have it anyway. So better to be detached from it. But then by detaching, you'll get it. But as soon as you attach yourself, it'll go away. So in other words, enjoyment is for Krishna. If we attach ourselves to Krishna, then that's how we'll actually be happy. When he's enjoying, then we enjoy. We can't enjoy separately. Right? Then anything that he's excessively attached to, let him remove that by contemplating the worthlessness of the activity. The activity, the particular item, whatever it is that is overly attachment for, let him contemplate that. In other words, when there's knowledge, then knowledge will bring detachment. Yeah? So jnana and vairagya, by pouring bhakti, jnana and vairagya come automatically. Because in bhakti you're contemplating the worthlessness of the whole material world and the glory of serving Krishna. So by that, then knowledge about the material world and attachment from the material world automatically come. Let him avoid all means of acquiring wealth which impede the study of the Veda. Let him maintain himself anyhow but study, because that devotion to the Veda study secures the realization of his aims. Because one always has to remember, okay, you know, you put in that quality time for the family that you've neglected over the last 30 years, and you're doing this, and they're all happy and nice and this and that, and then you reach 70 years old, and then you're dead. And now what are they going to do for you? Nothing. Right? And so, then what? Then again, birth. So was that your aim? Was the aim to be die surrounded by so-called loving relatives? If that's the aim, then okay, then you got it. But it says here, realization of this aim, one always has to remember what is actually the aim in life. To go back to Godhead, then that means he has to be able to study, perform his sadhana, these things. Any other way, maintain yourself. Right? And be happy with that. So then it goes back to contentment. Maintain yourself anyway and be content. And don't complain, oh, I don't have this, I don't have that, I'm not set up enough. That means you have aims other than Krishna consciousness. So I want you to just maintain yourself somehow and perform your devotional duties. That is according to one's realization, of course. If one is only a little bit into Krishna consciousness, then one will, that shouldn't be impeded. In other words, how much is your interest and ability in absorbing yourself in Krishna consciousness activities, then to that degree you should do that. You shouldn't not do that because of other duties. Does that make sense? In other words, economics will be kept to a minimum. You know, in other words, it's first your God consciousness, right? And then your duties to perform in your service and your social status. Then you consider economics, right? After Dharma, then only you consider Artha and Kama, right? Once Dharma is in place, then you can see what Artha you can gain. And then by what Artha you have, then you can see what sense gratification you can get, right? You can't set yourself up for very elaborate, expensive sense gratification if you have no Artha, right? So Artha is dependent, I mean, Kama is dependent on Artha. Artha is dependent upon Dharma. Right? But Dharma shouldn't be done for Artha and Kama. It should be done for Bhakti. If it's done for Bhakti, then because it's going up, then automatically moksha, which is in between the two, is attained. And Dharma anyway, because it has, you know, it's good activity, therefore it always gets Artha and Kama. They come automatic. You know? Just like when you go to a shop and you order a drink, you automatically get a cup, right? They don't tell you, okay, stick out your hands, you know, you get a cup with it. You don't say, will I get a cup with this? It's like, and the guy looks at you like, you know, what planet did this guy come from? You know, it's automatic. Does that make sense? They just go together. So you don't have to endeavor separately for them. So when Dharma is there, Artha and Kama automatically come. There's no need to separately endeavor. Because if you do, because here we see the snatic, he has to, it's his duty to perform some method, but according to scripture, of maintaining himself. Yes.
In the modern system, after the economic development is there, is that due to the past?
Yeah. It means it's just like this. It means that they profess all this stuff, but you name the man that's working on today, this week's work. Right? The man's driving around in his Porsche 911 from the money he got today, what he just made from today's deal? No. From what he did last week or the week before or whatever it was. Right? And the point is, and next week is he's going to be living off what he does this week. Right? One has to remember, Monday through Friday you work, only on Saturday you get your check. So that means, how did you eat Monday through Friday? You worked Monday through Friday, but not, you weren't maintained by your work Monday through Friday. You were maintained by last week's Monday through Friday. So it's a very simple calculation to understand that what you're getting in life, this lifetime, didn't come from this lifetime. Came from last. But it has to come through some medium. It doesn't just drop out of the air. So it comes through the medium of this lifetime's occupational duties. Though it's coming from last life. You know what I'm saying? You perform your occupational duties now with focus, and it comes through. The more it's focused, the more it can come through. You may be supposed to get so much X amount of money, but you get it by how focused you are on your duties. But at the same time, even if you don't do your duties, you'll get it anyway. But because you don't do duties, you won't get anything next week. Next life, you won't get anything. That's why then, if you just concentrate on Krishna consciousness, focus on that and with full commitment, then even you're doing nothing for economic gain, you're going to get whatever you deserve anyway. And because you've fully committed yourself to Krishna consciousness, then you go back to Godhead. Right? Like a Gita verse about one who, you know, like the consummation is complete. I think it's in the third chapter. Third or fourth. Yeah, in other words, whose commitment is complete, they get the result. They become Krishna conscious. They go back to Godhead. So you go back to Godhead, and you don't have to worry that next life you wouldn't get anything because you didn't do anything. Because you're not going to be here. And anyway, you can't get any more pious activity than bhakti. So even if you are here, you're going to get anyway, because it says that a yogi who doesn't finish, then he takes birth in an aristocratic family and sort of, you know, like this, so you get anyway. Does that make sense? So that's why it's not a matter of economics, it's a matter of occupational duties. So grihastha economics is part of his duties. But it's only part of, but it's economics is only approached from the platform of duty. Because it's his duty to maintain the family, therefore he must do one of these occupations. Right? Rather than the moderns, you just approach economics because, you know, it's practical, you got to feed the family. Yeah, but how are you going to choose what occupation you're going to use? You know what I'm saying? How do you choose? Okay, you don't go out and rob banks. Why not? You know, just because you'll get caught and you'll end up in jail. But if you didn't get caught and you end up in jail, then you probably rob banks, right? Because it's quick, easy money. And you just have to know a few words of the local language, like, you know, this is a stick up, give me all your money, something like that. It doesn't take much, you know. I'm sure anyone who has, you know, just grew up in the country, you wouldn't even have to go to school to be able to do this like that, you know. But then, you know, easy enough. As long as they can drive and they can figure out which end of the gun to hold on to, and they got enough energy to carry a big sack of money, then, you know, great, then they could do it. Right. But the point is then, well, there's, you know, okay, because the local laws don't allow it. Okay, so therefore that. But is that good enough? Because in the feast mine, you know, he doesn't have any problem. Or if he's like Robin Hood, then you take from the, you know, these, you know, scumbag rich people and you give it to the poor, you know, deserving, you know, common people. So then it's even glorious. So how do you decide what's right and wrong? On one side you're told thieving is bad at the same time as all the kids are reading Robin Hood and, you know, it's all glorious and all that. Right? You know what I'm saying? One person has a war with his neighbors and takes all their stuff, and then everybody, the international community goes, you know, this is bad and all this. Then another country comes in and kicks that guy out and takes everything he has, and then everything else, yes, this is very good. So how do you judge what's good and bad? You know what I'm saying? On the mundane platform, there's no hope. There's no question of figuring it out. Because the concept of thievery is bad is only coming from religion. Right? Because any world religion will say it's not good. You understand? So that means it's coming from God. So therefore, if you're doing the duties that are given to us by God, therefore, then you're not going to do that. Otherwise, how do you decide? How are you going to decide what occupation is good or not? what way of making money is not, because you're not supposed to bother other people. You know, stealing from them definitely bothers them. So you only know that by the Lord's law. What the Lord gives, then we can understand. Does that make some sense? So that's why Dharma is approached first. And from that, then whatever is within your Dharma, you approach Artha and Kama. But the Dharma is not being done for Artha and Kama. That comes anyway. Does that make sense? It just comes automatically. And whatever you deserve, you're going to get anyway. You know, it's not that you're going to get less. Okay. So, because your ultimate goal is to go back to Godhead, therefore your sadhana and that thing you shouldn't impede. Better to make a little less money, live more simply, and be Krishna conscious. Right? So that degree or level of your Krishna consciousness. So Brahmins, that is their duty. Basically, the Krishna conscious lifestyle is their occupation. So therefore they should not compromise it. You know, if one's taking up Kshatriya duties, Vaishya duties, Shudra duties, then yes, then definitely then there's more time must be spent in these other areas. So there will be some compromise. But for the Brahmin, he's supposed to study. That is his duty. That is his austerity. He's supposed to teach what he studies. He's supposed to perform sacrifice with what he knows. And that, he's supposed to give in charity. Because the realization of his aims is actually something higher, something beyond the you know, the temporal. It's something that has to be beyond into the transcendental. Let him walk here on earth, bringing his dress, speech, and thoughts to a conformity with his age, his occupation, his wealth, his sacred learning, and his race. Race meaning his family heritage. Right? You know, if he's from a dignified family, then he should behave in that way. If he's from a common family, then if he, you know, behaves according to those standards, then no one will mind. You know, but if he's from, you know, it's like Arjuna, you know, if he does certain things, people will complain. Or Yudhishthira does something, complain. You know, so many times you say, you're like, Lord Ramachandra was criticized by Bali, right? Because he killed him from, without challenging him from behind a tree. So then his first point was, hey, I thought you were from the Raghu dynasty. Because the kings of the Raghu dynasty, they're noble. They have all these good characters. So we've always heard that you are also in this family. But it appears that even though you're in this family, you don't live up to the name of this family. Right? So that was his criticism. You know, Ramachandra then put it on the side by saying, hey, you know, kings go all the time into the forest and without challenging, they shoot animals there. And you're a monkey, so what's the problem? So Vali kind of, okay, you got a point there. Okay. As soon as they were talking about religious principles and all that, and all, you know, he didn't buy it. You know, says you're more dignified than that. But as soon as he said, "Hey, you're a monkey," he's going, "Okay, you got a point there." Yeah. It's like okay. So here, so that means how you dress, how you speak, your thoughts. Then all that should be according to your age, your occupation, your wealth, your sacred learning, and your tradition. Right? You know, nothing looks more funny than old people who dress like kids or talk like kids. You know? Like that. Or a poor person dressing really wealthy. Like you always see it. You know, the guys that don't have a penny, but you know, they got the gold studs in their teeth and the gold chain and the big gold thing here. And they always have the shirt open so you can see the chain. You know, and all those kind of things. And, you know, they look a little sleazy, you know, like that. You know, you want a second-hand car? Yeah, then you go visit them. And if you don't, then you kind of stay away. You know, he's learning. In other words, you don't dress, you don't speak, and that, you know, that it doesn't match. You're not very educated. Don't present yourself as very educated. You know? There's occupation, depending on what it is. You speak accordingly, you know, like a Kshatriya will speak very nobly, if Brahmana speak according to the scriptures, you know, the Vaishya will speak very practically. you know, and a Shudra speaker, humbly, like this. So then it matches. Does that make sense? In other words, whatever you do, whatever is your occupation, you know, however you're maintaining it, that should match with the whole package. You know, in other words, you should dress according to the whole thing. So in the performance of his duties, it should be consistent. That's the thing. Consistency is the important element here. No guest must stay in his house without being honored, according to his ability, with a seat, food, a couch, water, or roots and fruits. Right? So we see this is coming up again. It's already been discussed before. Many times you see these things are discussed again and again. So repetition, according to Mimamsa, then means it's important. It's not that, oh hey, this point's already been made. No, because it's made twice, it's important. And if it's made more than twice, then you know it's even more. Right, so no guest must stay without being honored according to his ability. Right? Seat, food, a couch, water, roots, fruits. Right? Whatever he's got. That's what we said before. A grass mat, right? Something, even if it's just water or roots and fruit. Right? A couch or something that afterwards he can rest on. You know, so like this. Whatever you have according to your facility, that is honored. Those who become snatakas after studying the Veda or after completing their vows, and householders who are kshatriyas, one must worship by gifts of food sacred to gods and maids, but one must avoid those who are otherwise. Okay, so in other words, here, guest is, I don't know if it was described before, atiti. If it was before we went through it, or if it's coming. Atiti means a qualified Brahmin guest. That's an atiti. Like that. So in other words, in the devotee community, then it means devotees. Like that. But on the mundane plane, then it means a qualified Brahmin. You know, it's just like if you're out in the, you know, living out just in the, you know, out in the common community, and let us say, you know, some priest came and knocked on your door and said, I'm traveling, and, you know, like that, can I stay the night? Then you would naturally consider, you know, hosting them for the night and taking care of them. But if some just any old guy showed up, you don't know them, why would you won't host them? You know what I'm saying? So that's the principle that's there. So therefore, in the Vedic civilization, then you only, as a guest, are only hosting qualified Brahmins. You know, it mentions him here. Those become snatakas. So that means either they completed their vows or they're studying the Veda. Right? As before, we mentioned, snataka means one who's graduates. So you can graduate, there's four kinds of graduates, or three kinds of graduates. One who has completed his vow of stay in the Gurukul and has completed his study. Right? Because normally it's like you have 12 years of study and you'll study, you know, a Veda. Right? Now in that 12 years he may have not finished the Veda, but he finished his 12 years, so he graduates. Or he finished his study of the Veda in 8 years, but not his vow of 12 years, and he graduates. Right? Or he's done both. He finished his study and he finished his time. So that's his meaning here. That. And householders who are kshatriyas, right? So snataka means he's just finished, or he's a householder, but he hasn't become really well deep in the knowledge. Kshatriya means he's like realized in the shastras and in the practice. So in other words, those who have graduated properly, who are trained, and those who are realized, those who have knowledge and those who have realization. Those must be hosted. And they are worshipped by food sacred to the gods. In other words, prasadam. You don't just give them any old thing. You don't call up Ninos and Trump, you know, Margarita or something. Right? And others, then they're not hosted like that. You may be friendly and this and that, but, you know, like devotees, you come and you take care of those who aren't devotees, then you don't just host them. You don't know them. Like that. Does that make sense? Okay. A householder must give as much food as he is able to spare to those who do not cook for themselves. And to all beings, one must distribute without detriment to one's own interests. So that means those who don't cook for themselves, brahmacharis don't cook, vanaprastas, sannyasis, because they beg. You know, plus you have beggars. You know, plus you have other living entities that are there. You have, you know, you have your whatever animals are there, or you're keeping, or whatever you're maintaining. But without detriment to yourself. In other words, you pick a lifestyle that you can live at that you can give in charity. You don't say, okay, well, I can only live at this level, and that means you don't give any charity. The point is you've got money. Charity is included in your money. You know, it's just like, let us say, it's just like this. Okay, you're supposed to pay so much tax. So there's two ways they can do it. They can give you all the money, and then you can work it out with the IRS. Or it can be deducted and already given to the government before they give you the paycheck. In any case, it's not your money. Right? It's given away. So the difference is, if they give it to you, you can decide which charitable institution you're going to give it to. Or if you can't figure it, give it to the government. Right? You either pay tax or give it to charity. Right? But it's not yours. Right? So in the same way, as you're getting money coming from your previous work, but charity is included within it. So if you don't give in charity, then that means, you know, you're taking more. You're living in a lifestyle that's higher than what you should be. You know, this is for those who generate economics. Right? And then within that, even in your receiving whatever you get, you're not generating, you're just taking what comes, or you're begging. Then if you have extra, that's to be given away. But you don't automatically just raise your lifestyle. No, you keep it at whatever is a simple lifestyle, and whatever extra that's given away. So that means you don't live below, you know, a comfortable, simple lifestyle. But it's not that the simple means uncomfortable, but it means it's got to be simple and comfortable and include giving away what's excess. So giving away to others also includes belongings. You have excess belongings, that's also to be given away. A snatak who is able to procure food shall never waste himself with hunger, nor shall he wear old dirty clothes if he possesses property. Right? So he shouldn't be miserly. If he has money to dress properly and eat properly, he should do it. If he has no money to eat properly and dress properly, then that's there, because it says you should dress according to your wealth. You know, your age, your everything like that. So all that can, so if you have wealth, you don't dress like a beggar. You dress according to what is your status. Like that. You eat according to your status. But you don't waste. Okay. Any questions on that? Anything up there? Mm-hmm. Well, then if you're collecting for a project, then it all goes there. You know what I'm saying? That you work, if you're working out there, they say that you collect, keep some of it, or you have some other method, and then this goes for this. And, you know, it means that you work out yourself that you're comfortable with. But it should be that if it's being collected for another project, then it has to be go for that project. That's a rule that'll come up later. Is that it's one of the rules of law. It means law, meaning civil law. You know, that if someone has begged something for a particular purpose, it has to be used for it. Like, say you beg it for a temple, then it has to go and build a temple. If you beg it for books, it has to go to books. And if it, you only pay part of the books and part for others, then you can be punished for that. So money has to go for where it said it's going to go. You know, so if in that collection, then there's something you have to maintain yourself. You need certain things, this and that, too. You know, you have to eat, and you don't eat, and it's really hard to, you know, collect, you know, like that. So that works out there, but you don't decide that, okay, you need, you know, to buy a, you know, gold Rolex watch because you need to know the time, you know, when to start collecting, when not. You know, so in other words, you have to be able to be honest and see what you actually do need and what you don't, like that. Because if you need something else, then you should have another method to get that. But one shouldn't, this is somebody else's money, so you shouldn't be maintaining your material desires out of this. You should have another method. Does that make some sense? But just like your basic maintenance, this and that, that will come along with it. You know? So that's the kind of thing is that you work, either work that out yourself or work it out with those who you're working it out with, you know, that you're working for.
And that's still work for Nicole. I think it's begging for.
This is not for you, it's begging. You know, like that. So it's just, but it's being done on someone else's behalf. Like that, like the Brahmacharya will collect, and then whatever he collects goes to spiritual master. So that way you can look at, depending on how you're looking at it, you can look at it that way. Because whoever you're dependent upon, whatever you economically earn, it goes to them. And that's why it says the student, the son, and the wife, because they're dependent, whatever they earn is not theirs. It goes to whoever they're dependent upon. So the student goes to the teacher, the son and the wife, and the son goes to the father, the wife goes to the husband. That makes sense. That's what they gain by, you know, economic work. You know, what's given to them, you know, as a gift out of affection or that's theirs. You know what I'm saying? Somebody gives the wife a gift, that's hers. But if she goes out and gets a job, whatever she makes goes to the husband, right? And then actually, then the money that he gets is managed by the wife, so it comes back to her anyway. But it's his money, not her money. So as soon as she thinks it's her money, then she's independent, and then that means her mentality will have a difficulty. So in this way, then, if you're collecting for someone else, you're collecting for some project, then whoever is the project, you're depending upon them. And so then if they say, okay, you take this and that out of there, then it's been authorized and it works. You know, or if they say, no, you keep this much percentage, you know, then you adjust and you do whatever you want with it. You know, and if that percentage is big, then you might consider it's beyond what you need, so then even that you start to use for charity. Either the same project or some other project. Okay, so then next you're going to rules of good conduct. So now it'll go through many, 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 many little things. I mean, this we'll do on Monday. But from now through, this is a big, big part. There's all kinds of little points. This goes on for the next, up to 44. This is, it goes to the next four pages. Then we'll get into charity. So there's so much on charity. Right? Then spiritual merit, then retirement. So we see in here is that his occupation shouldn't disturb, you know, his spiritual life shouldn't disturb other living entities, should maintain his culture and principles, He has to take care of guests, right? Like that. Then he must behave properly. He must give in charity. He must accumulate spiritual merit. And he must retire from active, you know, personal economic development. You know, and then take one of those. So these are the duties within the Grihastha Ashram. Does that make any sense? You know.
I'd like to ask about this point regarding taxes. Quite often, devotees, like in temples, consider that they shouldn't pay taxes to the government. So maybe sometimes we try to avoid such situations.
That they have to see. Then they just have to give it in charity. The point is the temple is a charitable organization, so they should give it there. But to not pay tax and to not give in charity, then what's the point? The government is taking care of you, so you have a debt to the government. If you're considering yourself a Brahmin, okay, then you don't owe tax to the government. But still, as a Brahmin, you have to give in charity. So if they say you're supposed to give this much in tax, then you give that much to charity, give it to the temple, or projects that you like, you know, whatever. Yeah. So it's automatically. It's generally most governments, charity is considered. Otherwise, the government has to do it for welfare and this and that. So the government would rather put their money into other things, like, you know, education and defense. These are the biggest budgets. So the less they can put into welfare, because the common, you know, the general people, the citizens, are giving in charity, it just saves them all the infrastructure and management. I mean, it's a big problem for them. So if you do it, it's good for them, because they have to maintain everybody. So if they're doing that, that's fine. But if they don't want to give to the government, they won't give to the temple, then what's the meaning? Then how can they claim that they're Brahmins? Because Brahmins still have to give in charity.
Actually, I wanted to know regarding personal situations, like very often, I know at least two examples among, you know, some devotees who got in trouble, not because of, you know, trying to, because to make such excuse that let me use those money which I was supposed to lose, but for Krishna consciousness.
Yeah, but then they should see that it's given for something that the government will recognize. If the government's going to give you problems, then you have to, because you have to follow the laws of the local, you know, local laws.
Like the famous story in Chaitanya Charitamrita about Gopinatha Padmanabha, who was supposed to be sentenced and what Chaitanya refused to help him.
Yeah, because he's a tax collector, and he has a duty that he's supposed to collect so much money and give it to his superiors, and then what's extra over that he can keep. You know, that's the gain or loss in the tax collection. You have to pay X amount of money to the person above you. You collect more than that, then whatever's the difference, you keep. You collect less than that, then they got problems. You know, because the point is, if things are going right, they only set a tax amount that you got to pay according to what is available. So if you work hard and go around and collect all the taxes, then you should have excess. I mean, because it doesn't make sense that they're going to give you a tax that's more than what's available, because then they're not going to get it anyway, and they're not going to have somebody to do the work. They'll have to do it themselves. Right, the tax collector is only going to be inspired to do tax collection if he makes a decent profit. Does that make sense? Yeah. So it's just ways of reducing, in other words, privatizing, you know, government aspects of government. How do you say? Activity or control. You know, their offices. They have to collect the tax. So at some point it gets down to tax collectors. Because they actually go out in the field and get from each person. The king doesn't get from each person. So there is a tax collector, so it's his private business to collect the taxes. But then the tax is on behalf of the government. So it's an authorized tax. So he makes his money. So on those levels, then we don't get involved. You know? Just like that. You know? Just devotees are breaking the law, then it's not that the temple then supports that. No, they're not supposed to break the law. Yeah, no, he'd always, like when he goes to the temples, he always has an assistant with him, has a box with money. Whenever he goes, he gives to all the deities, all the Brahmins, all the, you know, like when we go and they always ask, you know, 5 rupees, 10 rupees for this, and I show them my aunt, and I put this, and then they want money. Yeah. He just goes and pays them. Mm-hmm. Oh, in Tirupati. Yeah, oh, they give a lot. So it's natural. It's just when the Brahmins collect extra. You know, it's like king gives 10,000 cows in charity. What's he going to do with 10,000 cows? You know? Somebody may have the ability and the need for it, but otherwise, then 10,000 are given, so the king gets benefit. Now he only needs 10, so he gives, you know, 9,990 away. So now he gets the benefit of giving in charity back. The next moment, he keeps a few cows, gives the rest in charity. So like that, it just keeps going on, and, you know, like that. So that means so many people get the benefit of the charity by that original thing because they don't need it, so they don't keep it. So like that, therefore, then the whole society becomes prosperous because the money is spread around. And it becomes prosperous because everybody's pious. It's the system works nicely.
What kind of benefit do you count for?
There's so much they give away in charity. So if they get the milk is going to be used for sacrifice, so they naturally get benefit.
I mean, I think this cows might be also like, you know, someone needs a girl, someone is getting down or whatever.
No, it's just the activity that they perform for the benefit of those who are rich. Not that being given in charity is that kind of thing. The person who gives the charity.
The rich who got these bonds, they not very rich.
So it's also what was really fun is because Didici had come to Indra before for something Indra refused to give. You know, that's something more minor. And now Indra has to go to Didici and he has to give his life. So much greater than what Didici had asked Indra. So very, in that whole pastime, the whole thing is Indra is just being, you know, humbled. Then he has to go to the guy who begged from him that he refused to give charity. Right? And then not only that, then he's got to listen to this demon tell him that, hey, you don't have any faith in the Lord's instructions, you know, you're supposed to use this thunderbolt to kill me. Why are you depending upon your club? You know, it says here, Maya, you know. This is, he's happy to listen to from a big demon, right? You know, and then at the end he does kill the demon, and then he figures out this is a great devotee, you know. So then the devotee went back to Godhead, and he's, you know, rotting here in the material world as king of heaven. So the whole pastime is Indra's, you know, humiliation, like that. You know, so these are always done because he's the top. Of those interested in sense gratification, he's the top, meaning as doing it's the highest position you can get. Above that, then it's only those who are detached from sense gratification. Maharjana Tapasatya. So all those are in another category. But of those who are karmakandis, who are going for sense gratification, he's the top. So he always gets into trouble because material desire always results in distress. So if it happens to him, why won't it happen to us? Because he's right up there. I mean, above us are all the Gandharvas and all those kind of Gandharvas, Yakshas, Rakshasas, all that. Above them are the, I think, the general citizens of the heavenly planets. Above them are the, like, the demigods that are control of different things, you know. And above them, I think, is the Dikpals, you know, like Varuna, Indra, I mean, Varuna, Agni, those like that. And above all them is Indra. I think that's how it goes in the, you know, happiness, how it goes. And on the Bali Upanishad, so it's like, because he's a devotee. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? That's the point, he's a devotee. But it's just he's in the materially inclined kind. That's the point. All the demigods are all devotees. Like that, you can't become a demigod, you know, in a position of authority unless you're a devotee. So it says the suras, but they depend upon their own prowess first, and then after, when it really gets, when the going gets rough, then they take shelter of Krishna. So that classifies them as devotees. So while the demons, going gets rough, then they just think of a different plan. Yeah, it's their own. They don't surrender to their own. Yeah? Om Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.